Change is coming fast in our society, and nothing is changing faster than how we get information. As the internet reshapes our lives, information giants of the last century, like newspapers and libraries, begin to look like dinosaurs. Someday it may not be possible to walk into a free library and pick up a copy of the New York Times. Or maybe it will. Some say libraries do have a role, and it may be more important than ever. Welcome to Hometown Alaska, KSKA's new show about people, ideas, and issues in our community. I'm Charles Woolforth. This week, my guests are National Library Consultant Bill Wilson, who's in town to help plan the future of Anchorage's libraries, and Carlton Sears, Director of the Innovative Libraries in Youngstown, Ohio. That's Hometown Alaska, up next after news from NPR.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. The Congressional Budget Office has delivered good news to backers of the Senate Finance Committee's health overhaul bill. NPR's Julie Robner has more.
After 2 weeks of nipping and tucking by committee members, the official scorekeeper of Congress said the bill would actually reduce the federal deficit by $81 billion over the next decade and would likely continue to reduce spending after that. CBO said the bill would cost a total of $829 billion over the next 10 years, well under the $900 billion target set by President Obama. But the bill would still leave an estimated 25 million people without health insurance by the year 2019. The bill under consideration in the House, by contrast, would provide insurance to 8 million more people. Neither bill would provide benefits to illegal immigrants. They represent about a third of those who would remain uninsured. Julie Rovner, NPR News, Washington.
Democratic Senator Harry Reid says a White House meeting with President Obama today to discuss the current state of the economy reinforced what he termed a shared commitment to create more jobs and to help the millions of Americans who are currently unemployed. Following the talks, which also included House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Reid said lawmakers are committed to helping to encourage businesses to create more jobs. While there was no mention in Reid's statement of a possible jobs creation tax credit, one Democratic aide says that was also discussed at the meeting. Justice Department surveys found most children are directly or indirectly exposed to violence. The study's authors call this the first comprehensive national look at this kind of violence, and NPR's Ari Shapiro reports.
The authors asked children about their experience of 48 different forms of violence, ranging from threats online to violent sexual assaults. Dr. David Finkelhor was a lead researcher.
We now have estimates of various kinds of violence exposure in childhood that we did not have before, like the fact that nearly 1 in 10 kids witnesses an assault in their family over the course of a year.
1 in 4 children reported being robbed, and 1 in 10 reported being injured in an assault. 6% were sexually assaulted. Attorney General Eric Holder spoke about the report at a youth violence event in Chicago.
We are not going to rest until we've done everything that we can to protect the American people, to protect American children, and to stem this tide of violence.
Ari Shapiro, NPR News, Washington.
International beer maker Anheuser-Busch InBev says it is getting out of the theme park business. The Belgian company has been shedding assets to help pay for its $52 billion buyout of Anheuser-Busch last year. The world's largest brewer agreed to sell SeaWorld and Busch Gardens theme parks to the private equity firm Blackstone Group in a deal valued at least $2.3 billion. On Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 5 points to end the session at 97.25. The Nasdaq closed up 6 points today. The S&P 500 rose 2 points. This is NPR. Telecommunications company Nortel is continuing to shed assets. The Canadian company, which once accounted for a third of the market value of the entire Toronto Stock Exchange, says it will sell its optical networking and carrier Ethernet businesses to Maryland-based Ciena Corp for $521 million in cash and stock. Under terms of the agreement, Ciena would offer jobs to at least 2,000 of Nortel's employees, or more than 85% of the total workforce of the business units involved in the sale. Where there's no firm guarantee the deal will close, since Ciena's offer will be used as an opening bid for an auction by Nortel. There's another leadership shakeup at the United States Olympic Committee. The group is searching for its sixth CEO this decade, just 5 days after Chicago was trounced in the bidding for the 2016 Olympics. NPR's Howard Berkus has more.
The U.S. Olympic Committee is blamed in part for Chicago's embarrassing showing in the International Olympic Committee voting last week for the host city of the 2016 Summer Games. Now, acting U.S. Olympic CEO Stephanie Streeter says she's ready to move on after just 7 months on the job. Streeter says she made the decision to leave before the IOC vote last Friday that abruptly ended Chicago's Olympic bid in the first round. Streeter was the USOC's fifth CEO this decade. Leadership turmoil has made it difficult for the group to establish the kind of international Olympic relationships considered critical to winning Olympic bidding. The USOC also angered international Olympic officials by announcing a U.S. Olympic TV network despite warnings not to proceed. Howard Berkus, NPR News.
Crude oil futures ended the day lower. Crude was down $1.31 a barrel to close at $69.57 a barrel in New York. I'm Jack Spear, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, your source for what works in public education. Learn more at edutopia.org.
Well, welcome back. This is Hometown Alaska, KSK's new show about people, ideas, and issues in our community. Our topic today is libraries and their role in the internet age, and I have two guests today. Bill Wilson is a library consultant with his own firm, Himmel & Wilson, based in Milton, Wisconsin. He's been consulting with libraries since 1987 and was Wisconsin's state librarian. He's in Anchorage working with the Anchorage Public Libraries on a plan for its future. Welcome, Bill.
Glad to be here.
And on the phone is Carlton Sears. He's the director of the Public Library of Youngstown in Mahoning County, Ohio. Carlton was in Anchorage working with Bill on the plan and talking about the innovative work he's been doing in his community. And Carlton is on the phone from his home in Ohio, where it is Miller time, I believe.
Just about.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you for being with us. So I need to introduce myself as well, because this is a special subject for me. I'm Charles Woolforth. I have a strong interest in today's topic as a member of the Anchorage Library Foundation Board of Directors, which supports the library, and I've been closely involved with the plan that Bill is working on. And I saw today's show as an opportunity to expose you to his ideas, and I have to admit right off the bat I have a bias in that I like the libraries and I use the libraries all the time, but I'm looking to hear from everyone's opinion, especially those who disagree or are skeptical. Want to have a lively conversation. And how do you get involved in that conversation? Well, the phone number here is 550-8433. That's locally. And outside the Anchorage area, it's 1-888-353-5752. And call in only in the 2 o'clock broadcast. If you're listening at 10, you're listening to a rerun. We've got a lot of links about libraries up on the website, which is ksk.org. You can also comment there, or finally, you can also send an email to hometownalaska@kska.org. And hopefully we'll talk to some listeners after we have some introductory comments here. Bill, you obviously have been working in this area for a long time, and the future has been coming for libraries for a long time. What kinds of things are libraries doing that are different from the traditional idea of just a place to store books?
I think that they're still doing a lot of that. The former, the role of libraries with print materials has remained quite strong in spite of, in the years that I've been working on it, lots and lots of predictions that libraries would go away. If we were to have believed Newsweek and Time magazine back in the 70s and early 80s, we shouldn't be here talking about public libraries today, because books were going to be replaced. However, we're really living in a books plus world. The books and print materials remain pretty important, but we're kind of going on beyond books. And in some ways, interestingly enough, we're returning to some earlier days of public libraries in the United States, in that libraries are serving as a place for public discourse, for example. That's something that was done in the old Carnegie libraries. And if you go to New England, you'll find libraries that are called Athenaeums that really were developed, and the idea of it was to have that public discourse or public learning experience. And we're seeing libraries returning to some of those kinds of things. In addition, we're moving on to electronic resources in lots of areas. There's a concept that we've been talking about that gets referred to as Library 2.0, and you may have heard of Web 2.0 or Business 2.0. The Web 2.0 really says that in this new world, there's a lot of opportunity for the users of information resources to kind of craft the kinds of services that they want and customize some of the services. We're starting to see iPhone applications for libraries and people to be able to connect to libraries either to connect with those print resources or connect via text with librarians for reference purposes or whatever else. The other thing is kind of the library is a gathering place, kind of center of community life. And I think Carlton probably has a lot to add about that because that's a role that his library is taking pretty seriously, at least in some of their locations. That idea that we need an important third place where community can come together.
Mm-hmm.
And that third place is a place that's not home, not work. The Ray Oldenburg kind of idea of an important place where there's a sense of ownership, but there's really the opportunity for people to meet and understand each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that role has certainly grown. So we've got this traditional world. We've got kind of this middle world of the place where both of those worlds collide and the technological world that takes us into a whole new set of resources.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let me turn to Carlton in Ohio. I was really impressed when you were here in Anchorage in the spring and you were talking about some of the things that your library has been doing to become more than a repository. In other words, you're reaching out to the community. And one of the things you discussed was trying to raise financial literacy in your community. And I thought maybe to start out with, you could just tell us about some of the some of those concrete things you've done to increase the importance of the library in Youngstown.
Well, I guess, you know, one of the things I'd say is we sort of stepped back and looked at the library in terms of some of its assets that people don't normally think about. Like, you know, it's a respected institution in the community. People value it. They think it's impartial. It's a place where a lot of people come together, probably more people come together in the library than in any other venue. And it was how can you work with other institutions to try to address really serious, persistent societal problems? And the financial literacy thing you're referring to really grew out of a program where we reinvented the library's early literacy program for children and started to think about, you know, what happens when all these brilliant babies get old enough to go to college, but their parents don't have the financial resources to send them. And what we did is the partners that we were already working with on early literacy, we began working with those and expanded it to explore things like a coalition to make sure that people were getting their earned income tax credits back. And it started with 12 organizations that were focused really on EITC, and like the library provides a space for seniors to do tax counseling. It really doesn't cost the library anything to do that. We just open our meeting rooms and say, get your tax counseling done here. The IRS and does the training, and because we have so many people coming through our doors, we heightened awareness of the availability of it, and over 2 years, it's resulted in $5 million of new money coming back in the community by increased earned income tax credits.
Wow. So yeah, that's something you can take to the city council, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's something very concrete, and that's not money that's going through an agency's hands. That's money that's going directly into the pocket of people. And so, you know, it's pretty concrete that you can say it's having a real impact.
Well, let me ask you this, Carlton. I don't know my history all that well, but I assume that when libraries became ubiquitous around this country, it was because, you know, poor working class people couldn't necessarily afford books. And this was a place where they could get books for free and get access to education and so forth. But it was really a place where you went to get information, and that's sort of what we're all used to. Are you kind of transforming it into more of a social service agency? And is there any concern about sort of biting off more than you can chew if you do that?
You know, I've had that question asked before, and I really don't think that we're getting into a social service agency role. It's more that there are certain issues that are consistent in the community that are just pervasive, and I guess I would call, what we've done is try to get out of the library enough so that we understand what the community's collective aspiration is. You know, what are they really hoping to deal with? It's like in Our United Way here, they have a thing called community priorities. And we're trying to identify what those community priorities are, and then through what we normally do, say, how can we help impact those priorities? And a lot of times, all that it is taking advantage of the fact that we're a respected institution, that we have a lot of eyeballs coming through the door, we have meeting room space where other organizations can come in and do programming, and we're basically saying, hey, our doors are open, use our meeting rooms, to the effect that we've got more people visiting our website than anybody else, put information up on our website. And we get part of the credit, but really a lot of the work is being done by our partners.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me turn to you, Bill, and ask this question as the, sort of the devil's advocate. Suppose I'm a big iPhone user, which it looks like you are, and I have a computer at home. I'm on Google all the time, and I know that many, many books are available, full text. And I say, well, okay, library, you're basically a buggy whip factory, and the automobile's just been invented, and now you're trying to turn the factory into something else. Is it the right institution to do these new functions? How do you respond to that kind of reaction?
You know, there's a whole lot of this that takes us back to kind of the core of what the institution has done traditionally. And one of the things that libraries have done traditionally with those print materials, those actual physical items, is that libraries have aggregated demand. There are a lot of people in the community that want the same thing. And by having a place that's open to all and available and understanding the kinds of needs for information or for materials, the library then can purchase on behalf of many. So kind of aggregating the demand in one place and then using the resources to supply what people want. The same model actually works in an electronic world. What we're seeing now is libraries licensing digital information. The whole ownership thing changes, but often what libraries are doing, I guess you could look at it as renting the information for an individual for a given period of time. Currently with the Anchorage Public Library, you can download audiobooks, and that's an opportunity that's there and available to you. The license fee is paid to the vendor that owns that intellectual content. The user doesn't get to keep it forever. It is sort of the old model of it self-destructs after a period of time. But the library has played a traditional role with information that's packaged in a different way. It's aggregated the demand. The people of Anchorage want X, Y, or Z. And then it is arranged for the transaction where the information is made available to many with one purchase.
Mm-hmm. So just to make sure I understand this now, if I go to iTunes to buy a song, 99 cents goes on my credit card, or I guess if I were to download a book, which is something I haven't done yet, but it would go on my credit card, and then I'd be able to read that on a device. Now, if I go to the library to do that, who's paying for the download? Is it the taxpayer is paying for it? Are they paying less than I'd be paying myself, or how does that work?
Actually, the model would be that essentially my library card ends up acting like a credit card, except my credit card doesn't have a limit on it, which is kind of nice to think about. In that the vendor that owns that property, that intellectual property, authenticates the fact that someone has licensed this content on my behalf. So on the basis of registration and IP addresses and those kinds of things, or the library card number entering a particular number would identify you as a legitimate borrower of that information. Same model works with some of the electronic databases that are made available.
So it's like a big subscription for the entire library.
It's like a big subscription for all. And my library card acts as the entry point, just like a credit card would.
I see. Well, let me remind listeners that we're interested in hearing what you think. When's the last time you used the library? And did you find what you were looking for? What would you like to find there? Or maybe you just don't think it's worth the money. You'd rather save on your taxes and not have a library. All opinions are welcome, and I'd really be interested in hearing what people have to say. So here come the phone numbers, which you can also find on the website. The local number is 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's toll-free, 888-353-5752. Those are for calling in during the 2 o'clock hour, since the 10 o'clock show is a rerun. And go to kska.org to find some interesting links and to comment. You can also send us an email at hometownalaska@kska.org. And talking to Carlton Sears in Youngstown, we're in obviously an economically distressed time period, and I imagine it's probably worse in your part of the country than it is here. How does that affect library usage? Do you see that more people come to the library because they are out of work or less? What's the trend?
Well, you're certainly correct that the times are economically stressed, and as Bill could probably tell you, we are under extreme financial pressure here. Our state funding is down about 30% this year, and that's our biggest source of revenue. We're actually on ballot before the taxpayers next month, but our usage is up about 10%. Overall, despite all of this, we actually find that there are more people coming in and using the Internet, more people borrowing books, checking out whatever we have than we've had in any recent memory. And I suppose it's because people are looking for a bargain, and the library really is about the best bargain people can get. I don't know what the tax rate in Anchorage is, but here people pay about $2 a month, $2 to $3 a month for the library. And you check out a couple books, and you've more than gotten your return on your investment.
Do you find people coming in to get help in looking for jobs or job training or resume prep and that kind of thing?
I'll tell you, we have 30% of the people that file for unemployment insurance in the state of Ohio do it on library computers.
Wow.
There is not an unemployment office that you can go to. It's all done online. So a lot of the e-government services, particularly when you look at the presence of broadband access and how many people actually have it, in a community, the library ends up being the principal point of broadband access where a lot of e-government services are conducted. We have partnerships with the job services where people actually refer people to come to the library to help do the what we call the one-stop program. And those agencies help to train our staff and actually have staff on site assisting people.
And now I'd like to go to a phone line. Claudia is on the line with a comment. Go ahead, Claudia.
Thank you so much for having this awesome story. I just wanted to thank everybody in Anchorage. We have a fabulous library. We've been here for about 4 years. We moved up from California. And we're the proud parents of a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old, and we regularly visit the library. The only thing I'd kind of like to see better is more promotion about the different activities that go on at the library. Sometimes we, even as much as we participate with the library, don't find out about some of the really nice reading groups or especially like this last summer that they had a lot of like the reading competition between the different age groups and this and that and the other. Didn't find out about it until the end of the summer. And so as we're parents with kids that are kind of growing and reading together, it's always a great motivation to get them to read more if they know that, you know, there's a little bit of something at the end of the rainbow outside of a great story.
Right.
So I want to thank everybody for all that you all do and just promoting your events more to the community electronically or somehow. I know I get the newsletter from the Anchorage Parks and Rec, and that is always super helpful because it keeps me in line with what's going on in my community and allows me to participate in a more in a more complete way. And so, yes, thank you very much, and keep up the good job.
So you'd like to see like maybe an electronic newsletter to let you know what's going on, essentially?
Absolutely. Even like it could be a quarterly thing. It could be a monthly thing. I don't know, you know, what it looks like, but I'm sure that there could even be some volunteering around that, and just like some little simple newsletter that goes out. Did you know that this is what's going on for preschoolers? This is what's going on for elementary schools. This is what's going for older adults. This is what's going on for, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks for that. You're talking to the right person here with Bill. I can get that into his report.
Absolutely. I think you identify something that we've seen as well. Some of the listeners may have taken a web survey that we've had available. We've had over 5,000 responses to that web survey. And one of the telling things about that web survey is that there are a lot of services that the library has that people aren't aware of. There was an open-ended question on the survey that said, you know, what could the library do that would cause you to use the library more frequently? And quite a number of people identified services that already exist, but that they're obviously not aware of.
Yeah, and just to let people know, you can get to that survey through KSKA.org. The link is right there at the top.
I don't know if doing an orientation to like new parents through the elementary schools, or just doing more partnerships with the elementary schools. I know that even maybe assisting one of the PTA meetings and just letting folks know about the different things and services that are available to parents is huge.
Yeah.
And again, I'm parent centric just because I'm in the middle of all of it, but it's always a nice way to get oriented.
Well, thanks for your call, Claudia. I appreciate your calling in. Now I'd like to turn to Kika. Did you have a comment?
Hi. I'm a college student here, a university student, so I tend to use the library on campus. And I've been told over and over for years that nobody uses the public library, that it's going under, you know, the whole myth. And I was amazed to find this semester, having to go to the main public library for books, that it was packed on a Wednesday afternoon, that there were hordes of people at the public library. And I realized it was a myth, and I've been quite often now that I realize that it's not just this hole-in-the-ground place, that it's actually a really viable service for the whole community.
Well, great. Thanks for that comment. Bill, what are the stats about library usage? How many people are actually using it?
Well, one of the stats that we pulled out for one of our initial reports was that more people went through the doors of the public libraries in Anchorage last year than attended events at the Sullivan Arena. We tend to look at places where people gather in large numbers and kind of discount the drip, drip, drip of the, Chinese water torture kind of idea. The steady flow of people coming through the door is what adds up to those very large numbers. And the numbers are tremendous.
Well, thanks for that comment, Kika. And now I'd like to go to Carol, who, just from my little computer screen, might have another point of view. Carol?
Hi. Yes. I've lived in 5 different states across the West Coast and in the Midwest, and Anchorage Library is the worst one by far that I have encountered, and primarily lack of resources and incredibly difficult to get into. You have to park over a city block away, and it's just not a friendly place, and it's definitely on my plus list for reasons for leaving the state if I get to that point. Thank you for taking my comment.
No, I think that's a good one. I mean, can you see that that would be an asset that, you know, if it were better designed, better, you know, what are the things that you'd like to see that would make it a place you did want to visit?
Actually, I practically grew up in libraries as a kid. I'm normally a big library supporter, and my primary disappointment with this place is the ability to get into it. It's, you go in on a Tuesday when they're holding city council meetings, and you're lucky if you can find any parking at all. And you've got all these acres of landscaping, which is nice, however, and a fountain that doesn't work sometimes. Why can't we have parking that's close by instead of just the staff having access? Why do I have to park practically a block away, walk in order to drop off books for the book sale? It's just, why are things so spaced out. It just doesn't make sense to
yeah,
me.
Yeah, going up that big staircase and across that big plaza and all that is a real barrier. I certainly understand you on that. Well, thanks for that comment. That was a good one. Carlton, I wanted to turn to you, and we just have you for half an hour until the break, and ask you, how did you go about your process of reinvention there in Youngstown? What was the how did you get people on board, and how did you make the decisions you made?
Well, to be perfectly honest, we went through a process like you're going through right now. And in going through it, we encountered an organization which I'd really recommend called the Harwood Institute for Public Innovation. They have a lot of content about what it takes to have a healthy, thriving community. And our library board and library people here felt that one of the priorities we had was that all of the organizations in a community really needed to pull together to make where we live a better place. We found inspiration through Harwood's work, and we just started to slowly apply it. And what we found was you have a few successes that are kind of small, and they build on each other, and before you know it, you have some pretty big undertakings.
So it's a snowball effect a little bit. Once you get going, things start to... Go ahead.
Very much. I was going to say, we started out with some very simple things called conversation salons, where it's just getting people together to having a place to talk. And before you knew it, we're reinventing the way we did children's services, and then that led to this financial stability partnership that I mentioned. And it sort of grows organically once you get started. But we took a lot of inspiration from the Harwood Institute's work that is out there, and I'd suggest people take a look at that.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being with us today. We've been hearing from Carlton Sears, who is the director of the Public Library of Youngstown in Mahoning County, and you can find his website at kska.org. We've got a call that we're going to come to after we have a break here, and we'd like to hear from more of your comments about the library as we come out of the break. I'll be giving the phone number, so get your pencils ready. And thanks for listening to Hometown Alaska. We'll be back in just a minute. Okay, we're back here on Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Wolforth. My guest today is Bill Wilson, who is a consultant. He's from Wisconsin, and he's helping envision a new future for the Anchorage Public Libraries. We're hopeful to get lots of comment from listeners today, people who use the library or don't, what you'd like to see different, what you'd like to see the same, and what your vision might be. And to call, the local number is 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752, and call only during the 2 o'clock hour if you're listening to the rerun. Of course, we're not here at 10 p.m. There are a bunch of really interesting links online at kska.org. You can also post a comment there. And finally, we accept email here in the studio at hometownalaska@kska.org. And now I'd like to go to a caller who's been waiting very patiently. Tony?
Hi, my name is Tony McPherson, and I work at the library. I'm the community relations coordinator, and I'm calling in response to the woman that was asking for the electronic calendar. Well, we are working on that. Our biggest hurdle is trying to deal with the number of people that we will be dealing with. We have over 100,000 cardholders, and any of the services out there are quite expensive. So we are working on that. That is definitely a priority for us, and I just wanted to let you know.
So the idea being that you could blast an email out to all 100,000 and let them know what's going on, or at least a link to a calendar and let them know what's happening?
Right. So they'll be able to opt in or out, or if they want the newsletter and the calendar, or if they want particular things, that's what we're trying to set up. So definitely as soon as we get that put together, we'll let everybody know.
Great. Well, thanks so much for that comment. I appreciate your calling in.
Hey, thanks for having the program. I'm enjoying it. Bye-bye.
So, Bill, tell me a little bit about the plan and how people can get involved and what the sort of the process is you're going through.
We've been working on the plan for a couple of months now, and we've tried to engage the Anchorage community to a large extent. By the time we get finished, we probably will have interacted in one way or another with somewhere around 6,000 people in Anchorage, which is pretty significant. Some of that's been through a series of focus groups that we've done, small groups of people, often some groups of people that have something similar or something in common. So parents of young children, we heard from a woman who identified herself in that way and said that she was kind of focused on the children's services aspect. A business owner may have some very different interests in the library and so on. So we've been bringing together different groups and in some cases neighborhood groups, some groups of people that share perhaps not as much use of the library. Had a group of young professionals to talk to them about some of those electronic services we were referring to before. The web survey has been a terrific response to that, and lots of positive comments. So that gathering of information has really formed a basis for us to start to develop some recommendations. Our approach to planning with communities about their libraries is that it's really not the consultant's role to develop the plan. It's the consultant's role to help the community develop their own plan. And so that listening portion has been very, very important. And now we're kind of taking some of what we've heard, the listening that we've done, and putting that together along with some of the best practices and best ideas that we see in place in the United States and Canada and elsewhere, and trying to craft a plan that at the same time is visionary and the other part is doable. Mm-hmm. You know, we're obviously in a situation where funds are limited. And so identifying priorities is very important. We've had a citizen sounding board that we've been working with. The group has been really, really terrific. And we met with that group yesterday. One of the tasks that that group was given for kind of homework in the next week or so really is to help us start to prioritize. We identified three or four different categories that we needed to look at to help that prioritization and figure out what comes first, what comes next, where will the money come from, those kinds of things. What can we do that doesn't cost money? Because there's always that low-hanging fruit, simple things that can be done that are either one-time costs or relatively low cost, but really improve the services that are available.
So we've mentioned that there's the survey, that there's a project website. You can find that through kska.org. And there's a town hall meeting. And
there are actually a couple of town hall meetings coming up in November. It's November 10th, Tuesday, November 10th. There's going to be one session that will be held from noon to 1:30. That really is kind of focused on businesses and will be held in the mayor's conference room downtown. We certainly invite anybody to come to that meeting, but there's going to be a little bit of a business slant to it in terms of how all of this in the plan might relate to business owners and commerce and that kind of thing in Anchorage. The general town hall meeting will be held at the Lusac Library that evening. So again, November 10th, Tuesday, November 10th at the Lusac Library. That one will be from 5:30 until 8:30 p.m. Everyone is invited to attend that session. And prior to that time, there will be available an executive summary, about four pages in length, that people will be able to look at and read. It'll also be available online at the project website that people can find at the KSKA website.
Great. All right. I'd like to go to the phones again. We've got several people calling in. Ray, did you have a comment?
Yes. You know, the state had a flood in its archives storage facilities in Juneau here a few months back and lost some records. And the importance of those records, I think, is not fully appreciated. And there's just an awful lot of archives down there in Juneau that aren't being that are hard to get to. It'd be nice to have an expansion of the Alaska portion of the library here in Anchorage, and those are the things you can't find online. You know, there was a time when a few years back I went out and bought myself a new set of encyclopedias, and about the same time I got that set of encyclopedias, learned how to use Google, and I've never opened them. And in fact, I'm looking for a place to give them away so I can have more storage space. But anyway, so the things that I can find online, I no longer come to the library for. But there are things I can't find online, and they mostly have to do with state history, state archives, those kinds of things. And there's a pretty good state library there at the library, but there's an awful lot of stuff that's not here that's down in Juneau.
Yeah, I'm a heavy user of that Alaska room where we have all the old newspapers, the old yearbooks, government reports, anything. If you're interested in Alaska history, that's where you turn. How does that fit into the mix, Bill, in terms of the library? Because we think of a public library as being something that's got more like the consumer reports things, the things that everybody needs, rather than the research area.
Yeah, that whole area fits very, very nicely, I think, into some of the electronic stuff that we've been talking about. The whole area of digitization of resources, and often the historic materials. A number of years ago, people in the library field started talking about slow-burning fires, and what they meant was many of the materials that we have that have invaluable resources slowly are self-destructing. Newsprint is one thing that doesn't last very long. And in fact, unless we're able to capture some of that, digitize some of that, once we digitize it, it may be available very, very broadly. So it might not have to go to Juneau to get those resources if, in fact, they were digitized and then properly tagged so that people can locate those materials.
Right. And so then the loss of one particular copy is not that important anymore. Yeah. Now, Don, you had a comment about the neighborhood libraries?
Yes. I just wanted to say how excited I am in Mountain View that we're going to get our neighborhood library back. I think that's really going to help create a sense of community, even a greater sense of community in our neighborhood, and also a sense of a belonging. So I think the idea of neighborhood libraries is really a good one, and one that I'm very excited about.
And we lost a lot of those neighborhood libraries when we had a budget crisis back in the mid-80s. I know we've been trying to get them back. Now we're in another budget crisis, so we'll see what happens. I guess, what is the role of neighborhood libraries, Bill? It's a way for people to get there without having to drive, I know.
Yeah, certainly there's a role that has to do with children and folks that may not have transportation. That's a important role that the neighborhood library plays. But the neighborhood library also can act as that center of community life that we were talking about in a smaller way. So perhaps a center of neighborhood life as opposed to center of community life. And in those places where neighborhood libraries really are engaged with their communities, reach out to the communities, get involved in neighborhood organizations and that kind of thing, you really create a situation in which that library may be the most important building or most important resource in a particular area. We had a focus group out in the Mountain View area, very, very receptive group in terms of having great ideas about cultural awareness and the role that libraries might play there. Taking the storytelling kind of theme, you know, we're all familiar with the fact that library would do story hours for young children. The theme that came out of Mountain View was that there are certain populations in Mountain View that, rather than having a printed tradition, have an oral tradition. How is that oral tradition passed on? A library can provide a place for that to happen, and one of the folks mentioned the recording of some of the elders telling some of the stories from those historic areas and then making that available to next generations, so that there really is a role that engages individuals and can have a tremendous impact on a neighborhood when a neighborhood library really works.
Yeah, and I've just been corrected that it was not in the mid-80s. It was 1989 that we lost 5 of our 9 branch libraries. It's pretty discouraging for library supporters that we're kind of faced to the same thing again. So we have another caller who's been waiting very patiently. Ella, I don't know if I have your name right. That's how it's been given to me. Go ahead. Are you still there?
Hello.
Go ahead.
My name is Ella. I am from Russia, but I live in Anchorage about more than 8 years. From this year, I used the library for this year, and I would like to tell, thank you. You have the best library, and you have this Russian magazine, Ogonek, very famous magazine, and you have a Russian section books. If Russian people listen to me on this radio, go to library and take and read this book on the Russian language. But thank you, I used English movie about Alaska for improve my English. And thank you, you are working very, very good. Thanks.
Thank you. And you speak English very well. And that's great. I never knew that we had Russian material in the library.
And you do a good librarian's heart very well. We feel good when we hear that.
Yeah. But for immigration, people must go to library and read this book, Russian book. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And let me give those numbers one more time. We've got about 20 minutes left. And if you want to get involved and let us know what you'd like to see happen with our libraries in Anchorage, we'd very much like to hear what you have to say. The local number is 550-8433. That's 550-8433. The number outside Anchorage is toll-free, 888-353-5752. That's 888-353-5752. And, of course, you can only call in while we're on the air, which is the 2 o'clock hour. The 10 o'clock broadcast is a repeat. You can find a bunch of links with more information, including the plan that Bill is talking about in the survey at kska.org. You can also leave a comment there or send an email to hometownalaska@kska.org. And if we have time, we'll read those on the air. The last caller, Bill, was talking about some materials that I didn't know were there, Russian materials. And I wonder if there's a bit of a barrier for the library in that people who don't use the library, even those who do, don't know all of what's there. And those who don't use it maybe have a very traditional idea of what the library is, may not know about the databases that are available online and all these other materials you've been talking about. How does the library continue to be or make itself into something that's at the top of mind and that people really think about and use?
I think, certainly mass market advertising is difficult and expensive, and generally, we think it's wonderful to get radio coverage and newspaper coverage and so on, and the library is always attempting to do so. But the idea of purchasing big commercial blocks and so on doesn't generally happen. What that means is that libraries really have to convey that message, really one group at a time. To kind of segment markets and connect people with materials that are relevant to them. The general message often is too watered down. It may not be meaningful to me. for our caller a moment ago. If we told her about materials the library had on auto mechanics, she might not be interested in those, even though they may be important to somebody else in the community. So that connecting with, in her case, the Russian immigrant community is an important kind of a task. And so identifying those resources, Carlton talked earlier on in the program about identifying the assets that the library has. So identifying those assets and then really doing some thought about which assets are most important to which segments of the population, and then in whatever way we can, and sometimes non-traditional ways, connecting with those segments of the population. Right now, we're talking about the town hall meetings we mentioned, using Facebook to reach some of the younger users and some of the folks that may be more oriented towards electronic information. And so in some cases, it may be non-traditional forms. We had the call from the person that works at the library about the electronic newsletter possibility and working on that. Another way of reaching some people and hopefully over time targeting different groups of people. Some libraries electronically through either a Facebook presence or through email lists that really can be customized provide library users with RSS feeds that they want. Really simple syndication is RSS. It's information coming from other places that may have a very, very targeted kind of an audience. Some libraries are playing the role of kind of preparing that for you in terms of what are you interested in, go through a checklist, do a survey kind of a thing. We identify your interests and then hook you up with electronic resources that may be particularly relevant to you with the opportunity to opt into those or opt out of those if you find that something is particularly relevant or not relevant to you. So connecting with segments of the population with the whatever it is the library has, the asset the library has that's relevant to them is the important piece.
And you've mentioned this idea of the third place, and I guess the first and second places would be home and work or home and school. The library already has meeting rooms and assembly hall and so forth. How does this idea as a community place for meeting differ from that? Is it more like a casual place to meet, or how do you envision that?
I think it's both. We're seeing great success in libraries in having a variety of different size meeting rooms. Most of the libraries that we're acquainted with that put conference size rooms, so rooms of for 8 to 15 people, something like that, that have a number of those rooms find that those rooms are constantly in use because community organizations may use them. They may be used for group study sessions. They may be used for book talk groups and so on. The LUSAC Library and the Anchorage Library System have got some assets that are very good. And you mentioned, the Wilda Marston Theater is a wonderful asset to have in a public library. Maximizing the use of those assets that are there, and then perhaps rethinking some of the spaces in the LUSAC Library. What can we do to address the issue that our earlier caller brought up in terms of the entrance to the library being kind of unfriendly and almost challenging you to get into the building? What can we do to add some warmth to your first experience as you come in through the door and so on? All of those are part of that that third place idea, a place that I'm comfortable with. Perhaps the community living room idea is there. We had libraries, again, I'll go back to what I said early on about libraries returning in some cases to some pretty traditional things. Most of us at some point in our life probably got into one of those Carnegie libraries or saw them in a picture and saw a fireplace and some easy chairs, kind of looked like the old boys club in terms of a comfortable place to sit and read. The idea that the library would be a place, not where I go and conduct a transaction and get out very quickly, not the convenience store idea, but a place where I go and sit down and read and am in an atmosphere that is conducive to that. So we need to create almost mini environments in our libraries that match some of the needs of our various segments of our population.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd like to read a couple of emails that we've received while we've been talking. This one comes from Gail. She says, I totally agree with the idea of the electronic newsletter. I hope that it would also include new acquisitions to the collections, including books, music, and movies. And that's a good idea because that's kind of how it works online, isn't it? You go back and read those websites that have new content all the time, and you don't go back to the ones that are static. So maybe getting that word out.
Some of the libraries doing that customization of service that I mentioned before, you can do the same thing with new acquisitions that I was talking about with the RSS feed kind of idea. An Amazon.com kind of an idea of instead of my behaviors as far as checking materials out, I go through a checklist and say, here are the authors that I like. Let me know when something that's in that genre that's new is added, or what are the new items that come in this category or by a particular author that I'm fond of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we have just a couple of minutes left. There's time for another call if there's somebody who has a comment that they want to get in. It's 550-8433 in town. And that's, of course, calling during the 2 o'clock hour when we are actually here. Here's another email. This one's from Christy, kind of a fan letter. Those are always nice to get, though. I use the library constantly. I probably have 25 books checked out right now. I may not use it as much for research as I used to, but I certainly could not afford to buy all the books I read, certainly not the newest. I love the travel books and the how-to books, too. The Alaska section is a treasure in itself. Additionally, I work for a local animal rescue group, and I appreciate there is a place I can send people to get to the internet. I love this library. And I guess that brings up another one, as we talk about all this electronic access, but there's an awful lot of people out there who don't have a computer.
You know, earlier on today was recounting a story that we heard in a library that we had worked with in Virginia. And, you know, it almost brings me to tears no matter how many times I repeat it, but about a gentleman who every morning would show up at a library in Fredericksburg, Virginia, in his pickup truck. And the story of this fellow was that he had a son who was killed in Iraq and now has a daughter serving in Iraq who could have opted out of going but chose to go. His use of the library really is that he doesn't have a computer with internet access at home. And every day he comes to that library, signs on to the library computer, and sends an email to his daughter in Iraq and hopes that the email is back in return, you know, from his previous day's email. It's hard to place a value on, that kind of a transaction, or it's hard to...
I don't want
to
cut you off, no. Bill, but we do have another caller. Okay. We're kind of out of time. This is Kenneth. Kenneth, can you give us a quick comment?
Yes, I'd like to say that back in the 70s and way before that, but ending in the 80s when the PAC was built, there was a great library downtown where there's literally thousands of workers that during lunch break are walking around looking for something to do. And currently, there's during the winter anyway, there's no longer even a bookstore downtown. Is there any chance that perhaps there's plans in the future to have at least a small library in the downtown area?
Well, I know that's been discussed. I think it's been a financial issue of getting the space and getting the operating money to put a library there. But that's certainly something that needs to be plugged into the plan that Bill's working on.
One thing that I mentioned to you on Friday of this week, we're going to be having a focus group session at the Collotti Brothers downtown location from 4 to 5:30. And it's going to be for downtown residents and for, you know, folks that work downtown. So we'd invite you to come if that's a possibility to share some of your thoughts and ideas about a downtown library.
Oh, certainly.
All right. Thanks so much for calling. I'm sorry to Anita. We're not going to have time for your call. Thanks to everyone who called and to my guests, Bill Wilson and Carlton Sears. Pat Yak is the Vice President of News and Public Media here at KSKA. Kristen Spack engineered today's program. Constant Huff was answering the phones. Join Kathleen McCoy. She'll be the host next week talking about Halloween costumes and all the scary stuff in preparation. That's next Wednesday here on the new Hometown Alaska on KSKA. Till then, this is Charles Woolforth, and thanks for listening.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated News and Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.